the Normandy landings. Mr. Stonehouse, Reel 5.
Reel 5. Okay, now where were we?
The Normandy landings.
Normandy landing, yes. We heard about that about 7:30 that morning. Now, our next move was to sometime in, must have been June, we were classified NN, which is not naval. We is, by which, whom I mean Pat O'Leary, Bob Shepherd, John Hopper, myself, and were sent to a camp for NN called Natzweiler. Stutthof Natzweiler, which was in Alsace-Lorraine. So we were shipped there. And then I was set to work again in digging trenches in Natzweiler. And it's there that one day the four SOE girls came to the camp, and I saw them, and and the whole story, you know, they were executed that evening, and I made, you know, deposition right after the war about these four girls and who they were and so on, how that happened.
What were their names?
Well, Diana Rowden was one of them. I've forgotten the others.
What?
I can't remember.
Communicate with them?
No. I saw them go down the through the camp, down to the end, the bottom of the camp, to the bunker, and where the crematorium was. One of the girls, Pat knew, he recognized. I didn't know any of the girls. I made a description of the girls as soon as I got back out of war, which was so accurate that they were recognized, which I must have very good eyesight. Because I reread the descriptions I made, I reread that last year for this film, Secret Hunters, and I had a sketch from memory. Have you been to the club? There's a sketch on the wall of these four girls.
The club, yes.
I did that from memory last year. Well, they were executed then, that day. It's one of the girls who was supposed to have come to life being put into the oven, you know, this white hot oven, and have scratched the man was shoving her into the crematorium oven. And after the war in, sometime spring of 46, all this came out in the newspapers. This was at least 8 months after the end of the war. And and I got this letter from one of the girls' mother, sent me the photograph of this girl. And said, is this one of the four? And I was practically 100%, 80%, let's say, not 100%, 85% sure it was. And but since that, there was this awful story about one of the girls coming to life, you know, and as she was being put into this white hot oven and scratching the man who was putting her in, I said, would a parent want to know something like that? So that weekend I went home and asked my mother and father, since they'd gone through the same thing with me and that I'd been reported missing, presumed dead for 2.5 years, I asked my mother, what should I do? And then she said, do you think it's the same girl? She said, yeah. And I said, yes. And she said, well, it's better to know to know the worst than to go on hoping and never know. So eventually I told the, I wrote back to Diana Rowden's mother, which is the one in question. I said, well, I'm practically sure it was your daughter. And as it turned out, it was.
For how long did you get a view of them?
Oh, I got a view of them for about 5 minutes at the most. Just the time of me just walking down through the camp.
What kind of picture did they present?
Well, there were four girls. Of course, they were very. It was a lovely afternoon, like today. This was in July, I think, and they're all rather pale, but in civilian clothes. And of course, we hadn't seen a girl for a woman. You know, they never see any woman in the camp, and I couldn't understand what they were doing there. And And I made a detailed description of what the girls wore, which I don't remember now. And each one, which it was absolutely accurate. And one of the most touching features, one of them, they hadn't makeup on, but you could tell that, you know, they'd been in jail for several months. And one of the girl had a little ribbon in her hair, sort of a defiant gesture. It was sort of, you know, it was very touching. And one of the girls had a fur coat on her arm. And later on, one of the SS guards walked back up the camp with the fur coat over his arm.
Did they look in poor condition or not?
No, they looked in, from an inmate's point of view, they looked in good condition. But, for, you know, I remember thinking at the time, they looked pale, very sallow, but otherwise they look okay.
What was their demeanor?
They just walked down. There was a narrow sort of steps going down the center of the camp. It's on a terrace going down like that, because it was on the hillside. And they all had their, you know, their clogs on, their, you know, which was usual for France then. And but they looked perfect, like ordinary women.
You said you were classified as Nacht und Nebel.
Yeah.
What exactly did that mean for you?
Well, the classification, I was told, was for people from the Western occupied countries, political prisoners, who were supposed to disappear. They weren't allowed to receive parcels, for instance, or communicate with their family. They were supposed to disappear in the night in the fog without a trace. That was the idea. So most of the Western occupied countries, you know, France, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, all this, as opposed to the Eastern countries.
But you give the impression that Natzweiler wasn't as bad as Mauthausen. Is that right?
In some ways it wasn't, no. Mauthausen was the worst, actually, in my experience. They were all pretty awful. I mean, the food was awful in all of them, but there wasn't... well, Natzweiler was in France to start with, you know, in Alsace-Lorraine. It was still within Western Europe. See, I've never been to Poland or to those camps there.
You described how you got that favoured treatment from the chaps being a POW in Britain. Do you think that English prisoners were treated any differently from people of other nationalities generally?
No, not at all. Well, of course, there weren't any in concentration camps. You have to remember that. We were the only... there may have been about... I bet not even half a dozen in all the concentration camps. There just weren't any, see, because England had not been occupied. The only British would have been from SOE or from the Channel Islands. The Channel Islands were the only occupied countries, British territory. And there were, I think, there was a policeman who was in concentration camp and a couple of other people, but otherwise there weren't any. There were no British in concentration camp.
So you never felt that your little group was getting any better treatment than everybody
else? No, absolutely not. We were exactly like everybody else, and we just... the Germans had... had respect for the British in principle.
Did it show itself to you?
But it didn't make any difference eventually in the way we were treated. And in fact, occasionally it could, like it happened with Pat, it would mean that, I remember in Saarbrücken, there had been a bombing of by the Allies the night before, and there was an orphanage or a school with children been killed, and the Gestapo came in and beat up Pat, saying you savages killing a lot of innocent little children. He said, well, and he went back and said, what have you done? I've forgotten. I won't speak for Pat, but it worked both ways. And then from September 4th, 44, the Nazvala was evacuated, and most of the prisoners went to Dachau.
Did you know why it was evacuated?
Yeah, because the Allies were approaching. And in fact, the Allies were only about 20 miles from where we were.
Could you hear the sound of battle?
No. At least I don't think so. No, I don't remember. Anyway, we were all sent in transport to Dachau, where we arrived on, I've forgotten what the date was. And then we stayed in Dachau till liberation on April the 29th, 45.
Is it true that the organization of Dachau broke down from your own experience?
No. No, it kept working till the end, as far as my experience.
Were you getting a continual influx of new people into Dachau from the east?
Oh yeah, towards the end particularly. You got, for instance, the... but this is the very end, you know, last couple of weeks, I would say. You get all the overflow from the Warsaw Ghetto. Also a lot, in fact, all of them were found dead in trucks when Dachau was liberated. And there was an effort to evacuate Dachau, where they started, but it wasn't continued. Evacuate the whole camp, even south or wherever.
Can you describe the circumstances of your liberation?
Well, it was on the Sunday. And we knew we'd been seen a lot of bombing. We knew the fighting was getting very near. The Allies were getting very close. And on the Sunday morning, because we'd all been afraid of being, we English were always afraid of being executed at the last moment, out of sheer spite. So we'd had some schemes about how to get out and how to hide, and I can't remember the details now, in the camp. But anyway, on the Sunday morning we found it was quite quiet, and that we saw white flags at the guard towers. So it meant waiting. And there were, eventually there was, the fighting came nearer, and there was some... And obviously the Allies had reached the camp, the outskirts of the camp. And there was some firing from the towers onto the... even in spite of the white flags, the SS up there started firing on the Americans. Well, they reached our actual camp, I think at 6 in the evening. It was still daylight. And of course that was, unbelievable. The feeling, and we couldn't believe it. I was with Bob, and to think that the whole thing was that we'd actually survived.
Were the soldiers mobbed?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the Americans, of course. I was one of the first Americans I saw was a woman, American woman in uniform. She was a war correspondent. I've forgotten her name now. And another correspondent came in and for the Jewish something or other agency here in London. And I gave him my name, to tell my family that I was alive. That's how they first found out. And that evening, Bob and I, we spent with the Americans in the guard room, eating K rations, which we thought was marvelous, and smoking like K's like that. And then the following day, we went out to the plantation. We got out of the camp itself, the plantation, which is a pepper mill, which was more civilized. And just on the Monday, I did those sketches up there on the Monday. In the crematorium with all those piles of corpses. There were five of those sketches. And then about the third day, Bob and I, the American intelligence, there was a captain or a major, came looking for Bob and I, not for Pat or anybody else, but Bob and I, and we were taken immediately out of the camp. We were the first to leave the camps. And we were taken to Augsburg because the SOE was looking for us. Yes, each camp. Natzweiler, for instance, this Yuri Galitzin, who was in intelligence, had found some of my sketches with our name on it. So he knew I was still alive up to a given time. So
on pieces of paper, you mean?
Yeah. No, somebody left. I did some portraits of the portrait sketches of. I have a lot of them, which I still have from Dachau, of fellow prisoners who had contact with home and could give you a little extra bread or something. You know. Anyway, so Bob and I were the first to leave, and we went to Augsburg. We spent a night in Augsburg with the Americans, and then. We were supposed to go to somewhere in Germany, get a plane back to London, but there wasn't any. So we went through the Siegfried Line and at night, and we were driving in this arms carrier. Just Bob and I were sitting in the back through the roads in Germany. In all the houses had these white flags outside, and there were these trucks full of German prisoners, all standing up like sardines, you know. So Bob and I, the only time we really had we were rather spiteful. We had these cartons of American cigarettes, and you know, there's so much traffic that, you know, across the country that we weren't going very fast. And for about at least an hour, at one point, there was this huge truck with all these German prisoners standing up there freezing, you know. And we were lolling in the back there, and what we did... each of us got four cigarettes each, lit them all up, had a lovely puff. They were all watching us, you see. We got and then threw them the cigarettes into the mud. Then we did another four. We did packed a whole carton of cigarettes.
These were army prisoners, though.
Yeah, a German army, German prisoners.
When the American GIs liberated you, did they show any reaction to the condition you were all in?
Well, they couldn't believe it. They were horrified. Some lot of them just threw up.
They actually vomited.
Mm-hmm. Well, I took them around like, for instance, I have a sketch there of a pile of corpses, and there's a GI.
Yes, I've seen them.
Well, in fact, you see, he couldn't have stood there. I put that afterwards. We were used to it, but they weren't, you see, and he couldn't, you know, the smell. And the sight of that, they couldn't have, you know, he'd have passed out. Most of them did, threw up.
They couldn't have got so close.
Mm.
Were you explaining to them your experiences when you were in the guard room with them?
Oh, yeah, because they wanted to know what I was doing there. It was rather funny. There was a general patch. And Bob and I had never seen American... he had, I think, three silver stars or something.
His insignia.
Insignias, you see. And the only thing we could think of was Polish. So Bob and I, by that time, were full lieutenants. And we thought maybe he's just a lieutenant or a captain. So we were very polite, but we were sort of, you know, not particularly impressed. And and we were talking to him. And then suddenly an American ran off and, you know, excuse me, General. And Bob and I looked at each other. So he was, "Are you a general?" And of course he laughed. He was very amused. He hadn't let on. See, we were sort of being rather matey, you know. And,